Everyone hear me? There we go. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. Before we get started, I want to share with you an app that's got my interest lately. Or a website, I'm sorry. Netflix.com. Now I have a family. I've got two kids. My movie queue is littered with kids' movies. Come Monday morning, we send a couple DVDs back, and I have to remember to update the queue. Sometimes feel like I'm in a foot race with some guy at the Tacoma distribution center for Netflix. I've got to reorganize my queue, otherwise come Friday, the choice of movies I have, Pokemon forever. Another good example, but I can go to my Netflix queue now and reorder it really easily. I've got all my data on one screen. I can drag drop to reorder the queue. I can delete a couple movies as I go, rate a couple that I've seen. It's a really nice, fluid, data-centric experience. A better example is Mint.com, maybe not quite as widely known. It's a personal finance website. You can go, you can reconcile your checking transactions all on one screen. You can reconcile your transactions pretty much as fast as you can click. There is server latency here, but they mask it very well. And if I hit F5 or back, I don't lose my data. All that data has been pushed out directly. So my name's Brad Olenek. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about these sort of experiences, trying to simplify them so they can be built into your website. A little bit about Rhea Services before we start. Who here has used Rhea Services? Well, thank you. Hope it's a satisfying experience for you. For those of you who haven't, we have an end-to-end web application framework focused on end-tier applications. We make it really easy to take your favorite data access layer, be it nHibernate, Entity Framework, POCOs, and we have you build a service around that, a service that exposes your data to your clients. And separately, we make it really easy to build client experiences. Those of you who are using it today are using a SOAP endpoint on our service to develop phone experiences. You're using our binary endpoint to build Silverlight experiences. And today I'm very excited to share with you a new jQuery client. A couple other goings-on in the real world that you might want to be aware of. We're taking the Rhea application pattern and moving it to the cloud. With that, you'll get better deployment. You'll also get management and monitoring of your deployed Rhea applications. And separately, we're investing more heavily in OData, both on the server, in our Rhea domain service, and also in this new jQuery client. So in looking at simplifying these data-centric experiences, I took a look at the broader JavaScript space and looked for examples of pieces that were doing this already. And there are many out there. The one that has broad adoption, though, is jQuery. So I took a look at jQuery and wondered, well, what if we added a client-side query model? You could then load data onto your client based on common UI interactions like paging, sorting, filtering. We can make it really easy to synchronize your presentation layer with your data. We can make your data observable. It issues change events when it's modified. We can make your UI controls reactive, and they're listening on those same data change events and keeping your presentation layer and your data in sync. We can keep track of what's been modified in your client-side data, and we can issue an AJAXed post to commit those changes back to your service. Now, how many different ways are there to edit data in HTML and JavaScript right now? You can bind a click handler that does a post immediately. You can bind a traditional HTML form to your data. Or maybe you have a little more exotic scenario where you have multiple related records that you need to edit in a transactional way. And I can guarantee you the code for each of those looks entirely different. But imagine you had a programming model now that was flexible enough to be used in all those scenarios. Fewer concepts to learn, and your code churns less if your app design happens to change during development. So with that, we took these insights and we developed a piece that we're going to show today, which is called Rhea.js. It's a jQuery client for WCF Rhea services. It's available today in preview form to download. So what is Rhea.js and what does it mean to your development? Well, clearly we have a rich client-side data management piece for you. It has a very simple, flexible API and it's built for great UI integration in terms of jQuery. So, of course, this will work great with Rhea services. And it's going to broaden your client reach so you can reach both mobile and desktop browsers. If you're not heavily invested in Rhea, we're going to expand on Rhea.js so it can connect to other WebCF HTTP services and give you more flexibility with how you build your services. Now, you're likely developing today with ASP.NET. So what does this mean to you? Well, you'll find that Rhea.js and Rhea services generally is a very additive piece to what you know about ASP.NET. You run a simple domain service wizard to add a service to your ASP.NET web application. Then separately, you apply one NuGet package to your project to get the JavaScript files that comprise Rhea.js. Likewise, the demo I'm about to show you uses ASP.NET authentication services. So many of the concepts you know and like about ASP.NET apply to an app built with Rhea services. So we're clearly doing something in the data space with Rhea.js, but we have to go a great deal further to make these Netflix or Mint.com experiences really easy. And here's where jQuery comes in. Now, jQuery is expanding. The jQuery UI team is embarking on a grid project right now. And there are a couple of noteworthy plugins that are being in development. jQuery templating and data linking make it really simple to dynamically create DOM on your client, bind it to your client-side data, and keep those two in sync. This is a great basis for building UI controls. Now, as part of the grid project, the jQuery team is investing in a data model. And why is that so? They're trying to develop an ecosystem for UI controls. They'll all have a common way of doing paging, sorting, filtering. A common way of updating data, becoming aware when data changes. And interestingly, a programming model just like this is an integral aspect of Rhea.js. So we started with $.data. This is already in jQuery today. And if you apply it to a jQuery object, it's a way of changing fields on your jQuery object, and jQuery will issue a change data event based on that. So we took this and we created analogs for arrays. $push, $splice. They do the same thing now. You update your arrays through these methods, and jQuery will issue you array change events to the larger application. $.datasource is a third piece of this programming model. It's a very simple API by which you can express query, paging, sorting, filtering, to bring data onto your client. We then keep track of that data for you, any updates that are applied to it, and push those back out to the cloud. So we're really happy with this programming model. In fact, we're actively socializing it with the jQuery team. So hopefully, in the near future, you'll see concepts like these make their way into jQuery. Because there's nothing WebCF or Rhea services specific here in the programming model. This is something that can help jQuery developers generally. So now with that, let's get into a demo. This is Big Shelf. You can think of this as Netflix.com for the avid reader. With Big Shelf, I can go and search for books very easily. I can go and flag some books that I want to read later. I can consult my friends list to have a very targeted experience for finding more books by seeing what they've read recently or what they have planned to read. Use this as a basis for flagging more books. Then I can go to my books queue and very easily see the books I might read. And once I've read them, go in and rate them. My friends can see these too. Now, to have a good experience here, we're going to want to develop a nice friends list, people with common reading interests, and that you do that here on this profile screen. So this is a different editing experience now than we saw in search. Search, when I was clicking save, that was being written directly out to our Rhea domain service. In this experience, this is more traditional HTML forms now, where the updates are being buffered in memory. But this is more than a traditional form experience. We're allowing the client to visualize what they've edited. Dipesh, my PM on my team, He's an avid reader, but his interests are not literally aligned with mine. Although I like the guy, I'm going to remove him from my friends list. I bumped into my buddy Howard yesterday, and we shared some books that we've been reading. I want to add him as a friend. So now we're editing not only a profile record here, but also related flag or friends records as well. And of course, this is a buffered editing experience, so I can either commit or roll back these changes. And of course, this is a dynamic editing or a fluid editing experience now, because this is all in memory. So now, how do we develop this app now? We started with a regular ASP.NET application. We got a client designer together, along with a server developer, and we developed some mock data as the base as a basis for our app. We have a list of books and a list of flag books. You notice the flag books, they refer to a book by ID, the foreign key. If I might read the book, it gets a rating of 0. And if I've already read the book and rated it, that's reflected in the rating field. So we use this as a basis of, you know, splitting off and building the larger application. The client designer went away and built, using ASP.NET, the ASPX files, HTML, CSS, for the visuals of the app, and also add a little bit of jQuery to make the user experience work even against this mock data. Separately, the server developer went away and ran the Rhea Services domain service wizard and developed a service, a CRUD pattern service very easily that has CRUD operations over each of the tables in our database with the intent of now serving up data that matches the mock data we saw earlier. So here we are today. The app already happens to work fairly well against the mock data. This is all in memory now. Even the editing experience works fairly well. But as soon as I hit a 5, of course, it's gone. Why is that? Well, because we're just editing the in-memory data. So let's sit down now. Let's remove the mock data, replace it with Rhea.js, and make this app really shine. So before we do that, I want to give you a little walkthrough of what this search page actually looks like at the jQuery level. It's very simple. We have a very primitive sort control here, which is effectively just adding a selected and removing a selected class based on button clicks, and then calling refresh to basically fetch the new books list. Separately, we have a list control here. List control is just relying on is just rendering our book data objects. It's based on jQuery templating now. So you have a template parameter and a container where we should put the books list. And separately here, we have one callback. Every time an item is rendered inside this list, this callback is called, and what we do in this case is do some jQuery data binding between the book elements and the book data and the book data objects. And that's just to enable the editing experience you saw when I clicked save and clicked on the star rating. Separately, we have an autocomplete for our search box. This is where I can type in a substring search. It's a traditional use of autocomplete. And again, whenever the user pauses when they're typing, we'll call refresh books list to go and update the books. And of course, we have a call to refresh books list just to prime the UI for the first books that are going to be seen when you load the page. Refresh books list remains to be implemented. So really simple app. We've got, 30, 40 lines of jQuery code. So let's now remove this mock data and replace it with Rhea.js. We'll start with books. Gone. And here we'll run our jQuery plugin for data source. To basically pull this data from the server. So what we're doing here is applying our data source plugin. We're going to give it some parameters now. We need a service URL, which we'll use throughout this app. This is the URL for our domain service. Give it a query method, a method on our domain service. Get books for search. Now we'll instruct the data source to not buffer changes. This happens to be the default value for this option, but I'm just driving a point home here. That what you saw in the editing experience, we're clicking on save or clicking on the star rating. Each one of those interactions is doing an AJAX post. So now all we've done here so far is instructed the data source, bound the data source to this array. Now the data source is responsible for populating that array now by bringing remote data onto the client. It's also listening on both the array and the entities in that array for changes. And when it receives those, it turns those into AJAX posts to push changes from the app back to your service. Now just with that, if we go back to our app, refresh. Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. One last thing I forgot. So we're going to go into refresh books list now. All we've set up is the binding between the data source and the array. We haven't yet loaded any data. So here we're going to follow a common plugin pattern in jQuery, where if you apply the plugin with parameters, that's meant to be a construction pattern to actually develop the data source, and that's what we did earlier. Here we're calling the plugin without parameters, and we're just retrieving a data source instance. It's got its own very simple API. In this case, we're calling refresh. Every time you call refresh, it's loading the remote data. So now, we hit F5. There we go. Now we have server data. Now luckily, I only have a couple of hundred books in my database right now. Otherwise, that would have taken a long time. So already we have server data. Now let's, in fact, we can follow along on the left-hand side here to see where we are. Next, let's go and add sorting, paging, and filtering to make this an even better experience. Here we're going to continue to add to our refresh books list. We're configuring options on the data source now. In this case, our sort option. And here you recall in our sort control, we're just going to pick off the sort button, which is currently selected. Use its text as the basis for sorting. So now all we're doing here is dynamically configuring query parameters for this data source. With just that little bit of jQuery, now we'll find that we now have server-side sorting. Sort by author, sort by title. Now let's continue on to follow a similar pattern here for filtering and paging. Follows a similar pattern, so I'm just going to do some cut-pasting now. Oops. So this looks very similar now. We're creating a filter descriptor saying, I want to filter on the book's title. I want to do a substring search on those books. And the value that I'm actually, the substring I'm searching on, is the value I'm picking from our search box. This is the autocomplete search box you saw. And following the same pattern, we're now changing the filter parameters on our data source. Hit F5. Now I can search for books on link. Now separately, let's add a pager. And this is a little plugin I developed quickly to illustrate a point that internally this pager is doing this very same dynamic changing of query options on the data source. As I click pager buttons, it's setting paging parameters or paging options on the data source and calling refresh just like you saw below. Now why I'm doing this is to illustrate the nice composition we have with this story. Doesn't quite fit on the screen. There we go. Now we have server-side paging. So what I'm illustrating here is the nice composition story. You can have controls in your app that are dynamically changing query options. You can have the app doing that itself. And notice these controls. The pager control only worries about the data source. It has no interest in the array of books itself. Separately, you can have UI controls now that only depend on the array. They have no awareness of the data source itself because it doesn't need to. It's just listening on the array for changes. So we have a nice layered composition story in the jQuery space with this. So now let's go to editing support. We're still, when we click on save and the star control, we're still editing this mock data. let's go remove that now and replace it with another use of data source, $.datasource. So this follows the same pattern we saw before. So let's speed up a little bit. So here we have another invocation of the data source plugin. The only difference here is this is using a static method on jQuery. Now, why is that? Because in this case, we want just a classic request-response pattern for fetching data. We don't want to bind the data source to an array like we did in the past. We just want to get the array back and then do something with it in the app. So this is classic request-response. It follows the same API of the earlier data source I showed you. So the instance responds to the refresh verb. And then the response comes in this refresh callback. And this is where we're retrieving our flagged books, which earlier had been mock data. This is also the first sighting of our entity data model support. So here we're fetching a profile, the current user profile, and expecting that it has child entities now, which are its flagged books. Now that's going to become important in a moment. So just with this change, hit F5 on our app again, and now we're actually updating server data. How do I know that? Hit F5, and those changes are now in our backend data. So you may think there's some smoke and mirrors happening. All I did is replace the mock data. I didn't make any other code level changes here. So what's happening there? So now it's time to go look at, in our list control, we did this binding between our DOM elements and our data objects. This is where this becomes important now. Let's take a look at how that's done. So now recall this link book and bind edit controls. This was working over our mock data just fine. So this is just standard jQuery code. But now what makes it update our Rhea domain service now? Let's take a look at that. I'm going to focus you on just a couple lines of code here because the rest of this is just standard jQuery. Here's how we actually add a flagged book instance for the given profile when I hit save. It's $.push. In an ordinary JavaScript program, I'd use the push method on array directly. This is now the variant in jQuery, or what we're proposing to jQuery, that'll have the side effect of raising array change events. Now, not only is the UI listening on those array change events, but also the data sources as well. So when it sees a flagged book addition like this to its array of books, or to its array of flagged books, the data source is going to issue that over the wire in terms of an AJAX post. So you also look at this and wonder, well, wait, flagged books has a foreign key to the profile table because it's a flagged book for a certain user. There's no use of IDs here. This is where our entity data model support becomes important. All the foreign key fill-in is done within the data source itself. The data source is aware of the metadata behind your service and knows how to fill in those foreign key fields. Now, when I click on a star rating, what does that look like at this level? That happens right here. We're using the jQuery data linking plugin that binds a book element in the DOM with a data object, which is our flagged book. So any change in the DOM, the clicking on the star rating, data link is going to respond to the DOM level change event there and turn that into a $.data call on the flagged book instance. And then as you saw below with $.push, the data source is listening on those change events and issuing a post to reflect that change to the rating field on this flagged book. So you saw I had to make no code level changes to make this happen. And it lends itself nicely to the developer workflow of developing mock data and then later refining your app. So now you notice in this app we had the My Books variation button here. So now this should operate similarly to how the Netflix queue works, right? This is a personalized option. Now, how many books can I possibly have? 100? It should work like the Netflix movie queue. I should dump all the data onto the client, and I should be able to page, sort, filter, lightning fast. It should all be in memory. That's the expectation of people who are using this app. So let's see how that might be done. It's a simple, well, actually not so simple, variation on how we're using data source. It's going to look a little arcane, and it'll have to walk us through it. So what this is doing now, we still have our original source of data here, our original data source, which is fetching the remote data. But with this apply a local query kind of factory pattern, we're creating a local data source that uses as its input data the remote data fetched by our remote data source. So we're creating a chain of data sources now. And now the local data source, which is now bound to this books array, it has the same API as the original data source. You do paging, sorting, filtering, following the exact same API. But that query is evaluated in memory with a very simple in-memory query processor. The only other change we have to make here, since we have chained data sources now, on the first refresh, we have to make sure we refresh both the data sources, the remote one, which will bring over our server data, and separately our local one, which will apply our local queries now. But notice we don't refresh both data sources for all, for the sort control or the autocomplete control, because in that case, whenever those change, we only want to be rerunning our in-memory queries. The remote data, we don't want to refresh those at that point. So with just this simple change now, the hit F5, the app looks exactly the same, but now the books have been loaded into memory, and paging, sorting, and filtering should be lightning fast. No server latency at all here because all the books are in memory. And this is good for user-specific scenarios where you know the data you're bringing onto your client is of modest size, and so you know you can operate upon that in memory. So that's local query. So now let's go to the profile page that we saw earlier and see this kind of different editing experience now, but with the same concepts we saw earlier with $.datasource. This is a little more built out because we've seen data source before, but it should be familiar by this point. We're bringing over a single profile record in this request response pattern we saw earlier. We're bringing our single profile record for the current user. The only difference here now is you'll notice that buffer changes equals true. That's informing the data source now that when it's listening on data change events from the array or from the individual entities in that array, it doesn't immediately issue an AJAX post. Rather, it's accumulating a change list internally. But now in the app itself, we have to wire up the verbs to commit and to revert the change list. Let's go do that now. In fact, I should have walked through this app. This app is even simpler than the search screen now, or this page is even simpler than the search screen. We have a simple HTML form that we're data linking to our single profile entity. Now, separately, when we first get that data on the client, we have to initially push the data into the DOM. So now let's bind up our submit button for this page so we can actually commit a change list once the user is happy with their changes. Add a click handler. This is yet another verb on the data source. And just like that, we've enabled the save button on our page. Commit follows the, revert follows the same pattern. So just two new operations we're calling on the data source. Now if we go to our profile page, we have our scalar properties implemented here. I can make my changes. I can go cancel to revert the whole change list. I'll try. Let's move on. Let's see if update happened to work. No, we'll have to move on. What did I miss here? Let's keep going. So that's change tracking. We're committing and reverting our change list. Now separately, our save and our cancel buttons, those should only be enabled when you actually have changes on the client or buffered in the data source. Let's see how that works. The data source itself can issue events. So we're going to register an entity state change event handler. So what is entity state now? So we're accumulating a change list internally inside this data source. And in the course of doing so, every entity that's in the data source, we're tracking its state. And what does that look like? We're tracking its state and we're exposing that over the data source API. So what we have here is simple jQuery code that's either enabling or disabling the save and cancel buttons. Now, how are we determining whether those should be enabled or disabled? On the data source, we're calling getEntityState on our current profile record. So now, when this profile entity has been updated on the client, it's going to transition to either the updated, added, or deleted state, depending on what operation's been performed on it. Now, these changes are only on the client, in our client-side cache. When the user clicks submit or commit or does their commit changes, all the entities involved in our change list are going to transition to their server states, either updating, adding, or deleting. And it's going to be in that state for the duration of the AJAX call to your service. When that AJAX call completes and we've verified now that the server data is in sync with our client data, all affected entities transition back to the unmodified state. And based on this, we can now have disabling and enabling of the save cancel buttons. Which isn't working either. Oh, there we go. So now I made an initial change, they're both enabled. If I wipe out my change list, they're both disabled. So now another use of entity state were these kind of cute little adornments you saw in the earlier demo. That is allowing clients to visualize what they've changed in their form. It follows the same pattern now. In this case, we're listening on jQuery's change data event. This happens whenever anyone issues a $.data field level change to a JavaScript object that we're tracking. Now, based on this, we're going to update property adornments. Let's look at how that works. This is just a variation on entity state that we saw earlier. The purpose of this method is to dynamically add a class which is updated to the individual items, individual scalar properties on our form. And we do this based on isModifiedProfile property. So here, we're getting the entity state for our profile record, and if it actually has been updated, we're calling into this other method on the profile data source, which is property changed, given a property name. Now, because we're already keeping track of this change list, it makes a lot of sense to just surface that to the client so they can make different user experiences around that. Now, with that change, we get our property level adornments that you saw. Cancel, they go away. That's entity state. The last thing I'm going to show you today is what we call shared validation. So as part of our domain service that we developed earlier, the domain service we developed can be the place where you start to add your business logic for your web application. A really small example of that is what we've done here. These are metadata classes now. You can think of these as peers to your data access layer classes that model your entities. We're inside the profile metadata class, and we've applied a data annotation now that's saying that our email address should conform to the regular expression for email addresses. So now we added this to the RIA domain service because it makes sense for this to be in the service itself. We'll apply some business logic on any update to our profile and refuse to make changes to the back end that aren't, in this case, don't conform to the email address schema. And that's done on the server now in your domain service. But as part of this jQuery client, we also serialize those rules to the client in a form that can be used by the jQuery validator. So with just that one code level change, we find that we have the jQuery validator now is nagging us that I've inputted an incorrect email address. Let's go take a look at what that looks like at the JavaScript level. This is just a trivial use of the jQuery validator. It's taking our form, applying the validator plugin, and as rules, we're just retrieving these from the data source itself. These have been serialized over the wire as part of the metadata that comes with the first hit of a RIA domain service. And then separately, we have to kick the validator explicitly to go and remove or add errors based on data changes to scalar properties in our form. So let's recap what we saw today. We saw local and remote query. Same programming model, span both fetching data from our remote server or fetching a large bulk of it and then querying it locally. Same programming model with respect to filtering, paging, and sorting. We saw data change events. These are built into jQuery. We hope to add array change events that are the analogs of field level changes. We saw our two dramatically different edit modes here now. On the search page, this was a write-through edit mode. And on the profile or on edit profile page, this was change tracked. Again, same programming model. We saw entity state and how that can be used to create a user experience around your change lists. You know, you probably missed when I first walked through the Big Shelf demo. Whenever I click on the save buttons, you saw that the book went gray for a moment. This was just giving the user a visual cue that their edits to their data are actually being heard by the app. Otherwise, you might mistrust and think that the app isn't even hearing your data changes. That was done in terms of entity state too. So this entity state machine that I showed you, it works in both the change track mode and it applies also to our write-through edit mode. You saw use of our entity data model. So you don't have to muck with foreign keys anymore. And you saw our shared validation. That is expressing your validation metadata once in your RIA domain service and applying that on the client, even before your domain service hears about the edits. So you see, this app has it's very, very simple in the amount of code we wrote. We've used very simple, flexible APIs and got a really rich result. So RIA.js is available today for you to go download. I really encourage you to do so. This is a preview now, so I really would appreciate your feedback. And importantly, feedback for additions. We're going to be broadening things out and building this out. We want this to be a great tool for developers. So please tell us what's missing that would keep you from using this in your apps. And with that, I'll take some questions. Here's some information on where you can download RIA.js. We have one link at the top here that'll take you to a set of steps to actually get this working on your system. And with that, I'll take some questions. You know, that's something I forgot. The question was, how big is the library? You know, that's something I should have prepared. I'll tell you, it's about 6 or 8 JavaScript files right now. They're each less than a couple hundred lines of code. I think it's roughly in the size of jQuery itself right now. Anything else? I'm sorry? The timing on the data grid? That's a good question. It's in progress right now. We're going through various stages of development, I'd say later this year, but I can't remember the actual time frame now. Sorry, I should have that. It's easy to find online, though. Just go in Bing for jQuery Grid. It'll take you to a wiki that'll give you all the planning steps they're going through and the timelines as well, I believe.
This is probably a RIA newbie question.
Sure, go on.
How the user's identity is flowing through the data set.
Oh, yeah. Great question. How is the user's identity flowing through this? As I mentioned really early, we're using ASP.NET authentication services here. So there's nothing really new that's happening here. When we first log in, it's returned a cookie back to the client. And then from that point on, all the HTTP requests, all use that same cookie. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, guys. We're running over. Is there any further questions? We'll take them outside, please.